Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is a pleasure to be with you, and I'm very grateful that you've chosen to invest the valuable minutes of your life to learn with me and my guests. And tonight, I am very excited to share a recent book called The Outstanding Organization and talk with author Karen Martin. She has written several books and has another book coming out soon. I want to tell you a little bit about Karen. In a second, there we go. Karen has been building, managing, and improving operations for more than 20 years. As a principal consultant for Karen Martin & Associates, LLC, she's a recognized thought leader in applying lean thinking and the psychology of change to office, service, and knowledge work environments. Her diverse client list includes Fortune 500 companies, as well as small businesses, government agencies, nonprofits, and startups. She's a co-author of the Kaizen Event Planner, co-developer of metrics-based process mapping, an instructor for the University of California, San Diego's Lean Enterprise Program, and industry advisor to the University of San Diego's Industrial and Systems Engineering Program. And we were discussing in our pre-call that it's a little warmer where she is out in California than where I am in Iowa. I'm excited to talk tonight and share Karen's work with you. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you so much, Melanie, for having me.
Oh, it is a pleasure. And we are going to have an action-packed hour of great information. And I will invite people to ask questions soon, either by calling on the phone at 347-215-8390, or to type a question in the chat area, something that you would like to ask Karen, because I'm excited that she's here with us live. So you're welcome to ask her any questions about either the Outstanding Organization or other books that you have read that she's authored or co-authored. Karen, before we get into the book, tell us a little bit about who is Karen Martin, beyond what I read.
That's a great question. You know, I, on the business side of things, I am someone who is incredibly passionate about helping businesses be more successful. And I have long believed, all the way back when I was helping to, was actually building operations myself, I've long believed that work simply doesn't have to be so difficult. We make it really difficult much of the time. And so for, all these years, I've been studying the way operations are developed, the way leaders lead, the way sales departments work with customers, and have, discovered that it doesn't have to be this difficult. So my passion is in helping organizations really fulfill their full potential so that leaders can sleep at night, shareholders are delighted, customers are delighted, employees have a positive work experience every day, and they leave work feeling fulfilled, which is absolutely possible, rather than drained. And, so that's why I am on the business side of things. And there's just a little aside on the personal side of things. I am a yoga practitioner and have long believed that we need to slow down and take a more measured look at everything around us. And by doing so, we see things that we don't normally see in the rush of daily life. And so I like helping organizations learn how to use that to their benefit and to earn more profit as a result and create a more positive work environment and a better experience for their customers.
I love that you talked about your passion, because I'm a passion test facilitator, among other certifications. And what I've found is the most interesting books that I have read are written by people with a passion for their topic, and it comes through in their writing, and it absolutely does in The Outstanding Organization.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And that idea about slowing down to go faster.
Right.
That's an idea that so many people have yet to discover. It took me a while to get
it's hard.
There.
It's very difficult.
We have a lot of demands, especially with all of the technology that was supposed to make it so that we worked less and had more leisure time, but instead it's encroached on any leisure time we might have had. But that's another call.
Indeed.
Karen, what was the seed, idea, or experience that led to your journey to write The Outstanding Organization?
You know, it started about 5 or 6 years ago when I was having, you know, client experience after client experience where they weren't achieving what they wanted to achieve nearly as quickly as they'd like to achieve it. And I felt like organizations, I still feel, organizations spend waste a tremendous amount of money and time for nothing. I mean, they get very little often from the types of effort they're putting into making improvement and innovating and all those things. And that bugs me. You know, I don't want people to be wasting money and time because goodness knows there's plenty to be doing with our time and our money. And so I started searching for some commonalities in all these different environments and what was holding organizations back, what was making it a little more impossible or a little slower to reach their full potential. I also started studying organizations out there and started looking at what were the things that the top performers or the better performers were doing differently from the lower performers. I mean, similar kinds of analysis, or at least thinking along the lines of Jim Collins and all the other folks that have come before me. I'm not a researcher, so I have more of an in-the-trenches view of it. But it was just those types of things that made me start trying to connect the dots between what was missing and what was there in the top-performing organizations. Melanie, are you there?
Sorry, I bumped the mute button because I was coughing and I was talking to no one. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. I'm glad you're there.
Would it be accurate to say then, Karen, that as you were working with organizations, your direct observation of what was happening with those performers led to you looking for patterns which resulted in what's in the Outstanding Organization book?
Yes. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned patterns because I am, a far away what I do now. I'm quite a bit farther away from where I started, and my undergrad degree was microbiology. So I started out as a scientist, and I am trained to find patterns. I think I was born finding patterns. And, yes, that's exactly what I was looking for and what I found.
Well, that's another conversation, too, because biology was one of my undergraduate majors.
Oh, very good.
We'll have several calls coming up, as with psychology.
We can be geeks together.
We absolutely could. So on that note, as you note in the book, and we know from experience, that there are so many organizations that are striving and working hard to improve their processes, to improve employee engagement, but they're not seeing sustainable success, with the emphasis on sustainable, which is where a number of employees and organizations are looking at, well, this is the latest fad of the month or trend of the year. And before we get into what you discovered, let's start with some operational definitions. First of all, how do you define an outstanding organization?
Good question. All right. So in my view, an outstanding organization has three primary characteristics. They are stellar at problem solving, so problems are quickly surfaced, they're clearly identified, and they're much more effective in applying the countermeasures, as I call it, versus solutions. And so there's not a lot of Band-Aid repairing going on. It's much more thoughtful and good improvements being made. So problem solving is number one. Outstanding organizations also have a very, very good disciplined approach to continuous improvement. So it's not they improve only when fires rear. It's that they're always improving and getting better and better even when there are no fires. And then the third characteristic is they're highly resilient. So through the disciplined and focus that I talk about in the book and also chaos reduction and then getting clarity across the organization, they're able to develop a tremendous amount of resilience against any of the market conditions, new customer conditions that present, and they're able to perform far more consistently rather than what we often see are these peaks and valleys in performance. And so that resilience helps an organization kind of stay the long course and keep improving.
Okay, great. And you mentioned chaos. How do you find chaos in terms of what's happening in organizations?
Well, chaos to me is a bit like water if you're a fish. A fish, as we've heard the story, a fish isn't thinking, I'm swimming in water. They're really unaware of their surroundings because it is such a natural part of, their environment. So I find that in many organizations, the employees and even leaders aren't even aware of the degree of chaos that they're actually allowing themselves to create on their own and deal with on a regular basis. So in the book, I talk very much about, or not very much, but a little bit about external chaos versus internally created and avoidable chaos. So external chaos is something that is just, the course of business. Things will come out of left field. Far fewer things come out of left field than what sometimes people think, but there are new conditions that are very sudden and require urgent, attention. But then there's this whole other bucket of chaos that's self-inflicted, that's avoidable, that organizations create for themselves. So that's what the book focuses on, is how to reduce that chaos and repair the cracks in the foundation so that an organization can build a very robust structure on this very solid foundation.
That is a very helpful look at chaos. We were just talking about this. I just started a new position earlier this month at ACT in their talent strategy, particularly learning and development area. And that organization is going through a wonderful cultural change as well as other changes. And I was talking with a colleague about how that when there are glitches, when there are problems, when there are process issues, sometimes we just tolerate and continue doing and moving forward, kind of like the water with the fish. It's one of the things, well, it happens.
Right, right.
So are those the kinds of things you're talking about when you're talking about chaos?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the four behaviors that I find lacking in many organizations that actually produce the chaos are lack of clarity, lack of focus, lack of discipline, and lack of engagement. And so those types, there's, of course, a whole bell curve spectrum of outstandingness, as I call it, in each of those four areas. And the weaker an organization is in any one of those four areas, of course, the tougher go they're going to have of it and the more difficulty they'll have keeping employees, keeping happy employees, attracting employees, having happy customers, keeping customers, innovating, and if they're a profit organization, making profit.
And we are going to dive into those characteristics in a bit. Before we do that, you make an interesting observation in the book that jumped out at me because I often talk about how important it is to see both the forest and the trees. And you looked at that analogy a little bit differently because you talked about the importance of seeing the trees, which is often missed in organizations. So can you explain a little bit about what you mean when you talk about the importance of seeing the trees in organizations?
Yeah, I think that we have to see both. Obviously, the forest is very good to see, but the trees are sometimes where we kind of gloss over some of the real issues that are preventing an organization from performing as high as it could and as strongly as it could. And so, trees might be everything from the way that the habits that an organization adopts that they don't even realize are habitual ways of dealing with problems and with staff, and even really small things like how you onboard a brand new hire. It's important that we look at each individual component and part of an organization and look at any of the chaos that it may or may not be producing, hopefully not, but often is producing, and take it a step at a time rather than glossing over looking at this whole composite and drawing these generalized conclusions about an organization that are often not reality.
Oh, and that's a real interesting point you just made of how when we sometimes take only the eagle's view, we miss the reality that's happening on the ground. And so let's talk about some of the concepts in the book. Particularly, let's go a little bit deeper with those four key characteristics that form the foundation for organizational excellence. You talked about clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement. So let's start with clarity. What are some key points that you would like to share about clarity or a lack of clarity in organizations?
I think that organizations, again, so we're talking about habits here. So there's habitual ways of thinking and communicating that organizations are sometimes kind of not aware that they have the amount of ambiguity they have. So, for example, I was working with a Fortune 100 company a few months ago, and we were working on a very urgent improvement program or process. And we were 3 days into a very expensive activity where they flew people in from all over the globe, and we had a leadership briefing. And in midway through the briefing, I realized that two of the VPs of this organization did not agree at all on what our objective for improvement actually even was. And, again, we have people flown in from all over the globe. It's a very big deal, high urgency, very short timelines to get some things resolved. And so I stopped the briefing and kind of moved over to the objective and said, well, let's just talk about what mission are we here to solve? I mean, what problem are we solving here? And these two VPs never did, to be frank, ever agree entirely on what the mission was. And so when you have an organization, this happens all the time. This is just one little activity where you have leadership not, there's no consensus across the leadership team on what's really going on. So the organization can never have clarity around what they need to do in order to solve the problem if they don't have clarity on what the problem even is. So getting clarity around problems is one of the most time-intensive things I do with clients. And it's really fascinating to me to see how many people at any level of the organization struggle with learning how to clarify problems. That's just one example.
One actually is costly. Yeah, if you want to talk about a couple more, because I know in the book and also in your webinars, you've talked about other areas of ambiguity that are confused or that lack clarity.
Yeah, so it's everything from being clear about what the organization's purpose really is. I choose purpose over mission and vision because I think purpose is much more clear on what we're actually talking about. There needs to be clarity around that purpose at all levels of the organization, and there often isn't. Clarity around the customers, who they really are, what they really value, not what we think they value, but what they actually value. And clarity around even, who does what. And when you look at an org chart, if it's an organization that's somewhat hierarchical and they have an org chart, very often the org charts aren't up to date. People new coming into the organization have no idea who to go to for what, who to go to for decisions. And so there's this chaos and this wasted time being spent in trying to figure things out that could have been made much more clear to begin with. And then the other area in clarity that's a biggie is the clarity of information that's coming into an area that's doing work, or clarity of information being presented at a meeting around a key project. Very often people are speaking in even using terminology that no one understands, using acronyms that no one understands, or just sugarcoating the truth so that you're not getting any clarity on what the real true current condition is for something. And so there's just these fear-based ways of communicating that create a lot of ambiguity that an organization needs to start discouraging that kind of behavior.
There is a lot of time spent on clarifying communication and what did somebody mean and were the right people contacted, and that all takes time away from productive results.
Right, and a lot of people say to me, well, clarity is a good thing. thing. I mean, clarification is a good thing. Why would we work on something if we're not clear? And I said, well, clearly, clarification, if it's needed, absolutely, you have to do it. But I'm talking about getting rid of the need to do it. So getting more clear information coming in, you know, from the get-go, so that you, people don't have to spend their time seeking clarification for something that could have or should have been clear to begin with. So that's the, that's where I kind of differentiate between, well, yes, clarification is a good thing. It is necessary. But what we want to do is start reducing the need for that clarification.
And again, I go back to what you said about habits, about things that we tolerate as being that's just the way it is or that's how the system works, rather than looking at process improvements to find that better mousetrap that can make it more efficient. I think sometimes people get concerned about the amount of time it takes on the front end because they're not seeing or not feeling like they're progressing toward the result when they spend the time necessary to provide that clarity in the planning phase. Did you find that to be true?
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head. I mean, and that's what, you know, part of my passion around this work that I do is, you know, giving organizations not only the permission to slow down, but kind of give them the, you know, the rule that you have to slow down. So we write, so plan, do, study, adjust is a scientific methodology for solving problems and innovating, developing new things. And in plan, do, study, adjust, that methodology, most organizations should be spending somewhere around 30, 50, 70, maybe even 80% of the total time in that planning stage where they're clearly identifying the problem and digging deeply into the root cause of it and just slowing down to make sure they really understand what's going on. Our human tendency, especially in 2013, is to rush to a solution. And so that's what wastes a lot of time in organizations because people aren't slowing down and getting clear from the beginning what it is that they're actually trying to solve and then how best to solve it.
And you also mentioned one of the things that I took from the webinar that you did yesterday was the piece about gaining clarity via visual management. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so my roots are from Deming, and then more recently for the last 13 years I've been a big fan of and practicing with my clients lean business management practices, and which come from Toyota. And so one of the things we've learned from Toyota is how important visual management systems are to, you know, get that kind of clarity there up front, and then to also drive discipline, which we haven't gotten to yet, but discipline into the organization around how it operates and how it improves. So visual management systems are visual, very physical systems. They could be on a computer monitor, but it has to be a monitor that's visually and physically, you know, very easy to get to, so someone's not having to dig into a shared drive to find the information. So it's on a wall. It doesn't have to be fancy, but it's on a wall. And it's visual information that helps manage the day-to-day work that's occurring, helps surface problems when a problem arises, helps keep everyone on track so there's a focus aspect of it as well. And what most organizations do is, especially in this technology era we're in, hide things in the computer and put everything that's a status, you know, like some kind of a status piece of information into a computer that people have to go and search for. So visual management systems are very, very effective if they're designed well. What most organizations have difficulty with initially is the truth factor of visual management systems. So you can't hide from the truth when you put a good, robust visual management system in place, but that's the point. We want to get clear on where we have problems so that we can respond quickly, rather than waiting and waiting until they fester and then it's really broken.
That's a very good point. And I'm sure we'll come back to this as we move through the other three characteristics. So let's move to focus and talk a little bit about that, what happens, the first one, how you define focus, and then what happens when there's a lack of focus.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's interesting how many people have asked me as I was writing and then as I've been talking about the book, what's different between focus and clarity, because they see those words as being, you know, somewhat one and the same. And I don't mean them the same at all. And when I'm talking about focus, what I'm talking about is avoiding distraction and staying the course on, you know, what you're there to achieve. And it has everything from this whole notion of multitasking, which I talk about quite a bit in the book. Outstanding organizations are much better at not multitasking than non-top performers. And this is true, by the way, of individual performers as well. I talk about outstanding organizations and organizations in the book, but all of the philosophy and all of the actual practices I talk about apply to individual performers as well. So let's talk about multitasking. It doesn't exist, at least for cognitive tasks. It doesn't exist. It's impossible to do.
So Karen, I'm going to interject because my regular listeners know that I have a passion for having your best brain and the research around there is no such thing as multitasking because there is a cost in our brain when we have to switch tasks. We introduce opportunity for errors. We add time to do the shift, and that time adds up. And I love the exercise that you talked about yesterday. So for my regular listeners, another thing that excited me about this book was this piece that you do about multitasking for cognitive tasks and how that creates a problem with focus.
Yeah, and it's so common in an organization that not only do people have to multitask, but they're expected. I'm sorry, switch task is the correct term, so thank you for mentioning that. It's switch tasking, not multitasking. And so they're not only expected to switch tasks, but they're actually kind of rewarded and encouraged to switch tasks, which is, you know, 180 the opposite direction of where we should be going in organizations. In fact, I don't know if you caught this on the webinar yesterday, but I've been noticing a high number of job descriptions and job postings where the ability to multitask is actually listed as a trait that they're looking for. And it's ironic because, I mean, it doesn't exist, first of all. And second of all, the last thing you should want are people that are stellar at doing something that's so harmful for an organization.
So yes, I would agree.
Yeah, you know, it's a little crazy making as well to be juggling too much. So what outstanding organizations do, they're incredibly focused on not only fewer projects or initiatives or whatever you want to call them in a given year, priorities in a given year, but they also focus on fewer at any given time. So the research that, you know, I did for the book showed very clearly that you could get far more, you know, sometimes 20, 30, 50, even 70% more output in the course of a year by simply focusing on fewer things at any one time. So our human tendency, especially in the era that we're in with technology and the rush, rush, hurry up, chop, chop world, is to try to juggle so many things at once, when in reality, if you juggle only a couple things at one time, you'll get them done more quickly, you'll have less switch tasking, they'll be higher quality, they'll be lower cost, and then you can move on to the next thing. But it's habit that has to be broken.
I was just going to say, do you find that challenging for organizations to grasp when you are working with them on focus?
Yes. I've spent the last 3 or 4 months since it was year-end helping several different clients put together their list of priorities for 2013. They all had January 1st fiscal year starts, and it is very, very difficult to get leaders to recognize that you can't boil the ocean in one fiscal year, and you're going to not accomplish a whole lot if you try to tackle too much. And, yeah, I'm able to get my clients to all reduce the list size, but the first year that they work with me, they almost always overcommit still against my encouragement and urging. And then, you know, they have to learn. They have to actually do it on their own and realize that it's not possible to be successful. And then the next year they reduce the list further of what they're going to focus on. And then the next year even further. And it sometimes takes 3 to 4 years before an organization gets outstanding in terms of its level of focus and its ability to focus appropriately.
And we are all challenged to do so much. I know in our professional organization chapter with ASTD, you know, the focus of saying we want only 4 goals for the year, was the challenge. Oh, we can do so much, and we can. And I agree with you, it's not all at once.
Yeah, you know, we can do a lot, but we can't do a lot well. And that's the key. That's the key. And most organizations, when I interview them initially and ask them what was on their list at the beginning of the previous year, you'll find that they only accomplished a very small percentage of what was on that list. And so, you know, you would think the math would tell the story really well that, okay, if you reduce that list, you know, wouldn't you rather get more done over the course of a whole year, even if it means you're starting with a smaller list? And it's breaking that tendency to say yes, yes, yes to everything. It's hard. It takes a lot of courage to say no, or we're going to delay. Stop doing, as Jim Collins and Matthew E. May and several others talk about a lot, stop doing takes a lot of courage. And so that's why it's tough.
Well, and you talked about, too, these are habits that have been nurtured and in some ways rewarded, not always with the best results, but rewarded in some way. And it takes time to unlearn old habits and relearn or learn new habits to take their place. That letting go is part of the process, and we sometimes forget. We just keep adding more stuff.
Yeah, unlearning is key. You say it very well. I mean, it really is a matter of unlearning. And I just got done reading Charles Duhigg's book, The Power of Habit. It is an excellent book at looking at how we form habits and what it takes to replace them, you know, with new habits, and powerful research.
I'll add that one to my list. That's come across my radar several times in the last week, The Power of Habit.
Very good.
Okay,
book.
As our time is about half gone already, let's talk about the last two pieces and then open the lines for questions. So let's move on to the characteristic of discipline. Mm. How do you define discipline, and what do you notice in organizations that lack discipline, and how can they improve?
Well, share what discipline is not, first of all, because I think people tend to jump to the wrong conclusion around discipline when they haven't read the book yet. So discipline is not being rigid and inflexible and you know, bureaucratic and stodgy and all those things that, you know, sometimes we associate discipline with. In fact, discipline's the opposite, in that the more disciplined an organization is in terms of how it operates. So it's everything from, you know, how it plans projects, how it plans and runs meetings, how it problem solves. Just the entire way an organization operates creates, if it's standardized and there's a consistency around it so that you have predictability, then it actually becomes a far more agile organization and can adapt far more quickly because you've got a standardized way of behaving already in place. So it's a little counterintuitive to think that discipline creates more agility and standardization creates more flexibility. You know, it's just a little bit of a little zen thought. And so discipline in outstanding organizations means that they've got a very consistent approach for how they deal with pretty much everything, and that when they need to change that approach, the whole organization can move at once, so you can get a big cruise ship actually navigating a turn pretty quickly if you have disciplined processes and approach already in place. So one of the places where organizations lack discipline the most is, you know, here we're at this, we've been at this for decades and decades and decades. I still see very few processes well-defined, well-documented, and that are current. And I see very few processes where there's one owner for the entire process that does and is responsible for and accountable for actually measuring process performance and making continuous improvement. And I find very few processes have 2 to 5 key performance indicators that help you know whether the process is even performing well or not. And so this is something where I'm about to go on a rant, so I should probably stop for a moment and let you interject. But I do want to talk at some point about what outstanding organizations do differently and what organizations need to do to get process management in a better state than what it currently is in most organizations.
Okay, well, let's go that direction then and talk about what they can do to be better at this point.
Okay, so here's what I see that's a little wrong with what's going on out there right now. A lot of organizations have rightfully gotten excited about Lean and to some degree Six Sigma, and they've sent people to training, and they've gotten these teams of black belts and green belts and yellow belts and white belts and Lean champions, and some of them are full-time improvement professionals, and some of them have shared responsibility or whatever. So what Toyota has done, and the foundation of Lean, and actually some other organizations as well, is that the improvement is part of management. It's part of a manager's job, a supervisor's job, a team lead's job, a vice president's job, a CEO's job. Improvement is part of management. It is management. And so what has happened is we put these improvement people in place where their job is improvement and everyone else's job is not improvement. And it's all wrong. That's not how it's supposed to work. So for organizations that have these, kind of armies of black belts and green belts and yellow belts, what they need to be doing is getting them coached to be coaches. They need to be teaching people, managers and supervisors and team leads and VPs, how to manage processes so that you can get it into the DNA of the organization, and the organization will run very, very well if you have improvement part of management. So I could go on and on about this one, but that's the short of it, and that's what has to happen. And outstanding organizations don't have armies of black belts running around most of the time.
And that speaks volumes when you're talking about integrating improvement into all managers and leaders' positions, and even individual employees thinking about improvement in process makes a huge difference than it just being those isolated departments or individuals. I want to talk real quickly, because you mentioned this earlier, Karen, about the plan, do, study, adjust that you talk about in the discipline section. Could you explain what each of those steps means?
Well, okay, thank you. Yeah, so plan, do, study, adjust is my preferred terminology over what you sometimes hear more commonly, which is plan, do, check, act. And it's because check and act are often misinterpreted, and study and adjust is more linguistically correct as far as what you're actually doing in those steps. And plan, do, study, adjust was also Deming's preferred way of referring to the scientific methodology, in contrast to what people often think PDCA was a Deming definition. It wasn't. But anyway, so plan, do, study, adjust is a scientific method for solving problems or innovating, creating new things. And in the plan stage, that's when you're getting very, very clear on what the objective is, what the problem is. You're getting very, very clear, in the case of a problem, on what the root cause of it is. And you literally don't move forward until you're very, very clear about the root cause. No matter how long it takes, you don't move forward until you understand very clearly what it is. A problem clearly defined is 50%, 80%, maybe 85% solved, because the quote, solutions become so clear when you're very clear about what the root cause is that it really becomes much easier. But you have to invest that time up front in order to go fast, go slow to go fast down the road. So that's what plan is about. Do is about investing in experimentation. So when people go into problem solving, they often are expected to put a solution in place and it's done and it's perfect and life goes on. Well, life doesn't work that way. Everything that we try is indeed an experiment. So we're not suggesting that you take spaghetti out of some water and throw it on the wall and pray that see if it sticks or not. That's not what it's about. It's about being very thoughtful and methodical about how you're approaching a problem. But it is very much about taking the time to experiment and make sure that things are going to work the way you anticipate. Then, after the experiment has proven out, to prove the hypothesis that you think that is going to be a solution to the problem, then you implement, And then you study, and that's what the PDS study is about, is you study what really happens. So we usually have habits to rush ahead to the next problem and never really stop to reflect and study what went on, what organizational learning. I mean, there's a lot of learning in problem solving, right? A ton of learning. And so to not stop and really, you know, suck that in and savor it and spread it across the organization, it's a loss to not take that time. And then finally is adjusting. And the reason why I like adjusting more than acting is that acting, you know, is a little more of that, okay, we're done, we're going to wipe our hands and go on to the next one. Whereas adjusting is about taking a close look at performance, process performance, and adjusting as the conditions change. And it drives that whole continuous improvement cycle of PDSA, 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 so that it's not just a project that's done and then you move on to the next thing.
And I think that getting past the we only want to invest in one solution mindset, because that experimentation and measuring results, looking at what's working, and then adjust based on keep the parts that are working and then adjust the parts that are not. I think when some businesses want to wait till they have the perfect solution, so they're constantly aiming, they're never trying or pulling the trigger at the target, so to speak. And then there are those who are, we want to get out there first, and so they're just throwing darts, almost like they're blindfolded at the target, and hopefully one will hit. So this model, if organizations adopt this, will help them to have that disciplined approach to how they deal with problems. And I think you really made a great point for how important it is to identify the root cause clearly, because otherwise you may not all be solving the true root cause if you don't agree on it, or you're solving a problem not connected to that root cause, which also causes delay and increases cost.
Yeah, and, you know, something else about slowing down and getting clear about the root cause. You know, I hear a lot of people complain and kind of whine a lot about resistance to change. So first of all, I always say, well, remember that resistance to, if it's just a change and it's not truly an improvement, the resistance is probably well-grounded and a good thing. So a lot of change isn't necessarily an improvement going on out there. But the other thing is that when people get very, very clear, we're kind of sneaking back to clarity because these things all go together. If they get very, very clear on the root cause, you have far less debate and disagreement around the countermeasure, the term I prefer, what needs to be done, because you're so darn clear that it's obvious what you're going to do. But it takes time to get that clarity.
Yes, it does. So let's shift gears, Karen, and talk about how you define engagement and what outstanding organizations do.
So engagement, in my view, is a bit of a follow-on from the other three, that if an organization is operating with impeccable clarity and they're maintaining laser focus and they've got this, you know, very consistent, disciplined approach for how they're operating, people will naturally engage because they won't have to be dealing with all the chaos that happens when you don't have those behaviors in place. So disengagement, to me, comes, you know, by and large, from there being a fairly high amount of chaos in an organization. And people just check out. They get burned out, they get fried, and they just check out when they're not able to function. So my belief for, you know, all my years of life in the work world, which is a lot, my belief has always been that most people, very rare exceptions, most people walk in through the doors of a business in the morning wanting to do well, wanting to serve, wanting to help. They are very, very well intentioned. So the good news is that people will do whatever it takes to get their job done. And the bad news is people will do whatever it takes to get the job done. So that's another reason why having a disciplined approach is highly important, so that you don't have people making up ways and doing and cutting corners and going around things in order to just be successful in the job. So back to the disengagement thing, when people walk through the doors and all they meet are obstacle upon obstacle upon obstacle to being successful, you know, who's going to stay engaged or who's going to stay highly engaged when you're, you know, dealing with that kind of effort. It's like you're sludging through mud up to your waist when you could be dealing with water that's just ankle high. And so, again, you know, I help organizations learn how to get out of their own way of success so that they can get deep levels of engagement. And I don't believe that the key to engagement is about all about, you know, bonuses and profit sharing. I do think it's important to profit share when you can, but I don't think it's money that's really. In fact, I don't even believe that engagement is a natural byproduct just because we're complimenting people and giving them a little bit of rah-rah. People engage, in my opinion, when they're given control, some degree of control, you know, controlled control over their work that they do and the processes that they're, you know, using to get their work done. They're given tremendous opportunity to be creative, and they're deeply connected to customers, coworkers, the organization's purpose, and all of those things. So it's all human need and meeting human need. That's what engages people, in my opinion, and in my experience.
And those align quite well with what Daniel Pink talks about in Drive. Control, looking at autonomy, the connection to the purpose, and the creativity also links to mastery. Let me try new ways. Let me get better at what I do. And I can do that when I can use my skills and my potentialities, slow down, to do that. And, again, you talked about these as being human needs. And
yeah.
It's important to look at that human factor.
Absolutely, because you know what? Human need is human need. We're not going to change that. It's biology. It is what it is. And the one thing that I haven't mentioned yet that is one of the things I kicked the book off with is a discussion about respect for people. And respect is giving people control, the ability to connect, and the outlets for their creative potential. That's what respect is. So disrespect would be giving an employee a process to follow and having, you know, them have no input into the development of that process, no ability to get the process improved when it clearly needs to be improved. You know, all those things, that's disrespectful. You know, disrespect is far more than how we talk with each other and our body language and whether we're saying something, you know, behind closed doors that we later wish we didn't. I mean, you know, it's far beyond that. And respect
yes.
is helping people be successful.
Absolutely. And to truly recognize the human capital factor, you know, there are a number of companies who say, yes, our employees are our greatest asset, but you wouldn't know it by the processes and the procedures that they have within their organizations.
Absolutely. You know, talk is one thing. Actions speak louder than words.
They absolutely do. I want to talk, before we open it up for questions, just to take a couple minutes to talk a little bit about the resource templates that you have on the website, as well as the organization self-assessment. So could you share some about those, the templates
Sure.
and the self-assessment?
Sure. So there are two interactive Excel-based tools that accompany the book. One is the prioritization chart, which will help organizations prioritize all the possible projects or improvements that they, you know, might want to tackle in a, it doesn't even have to be a fiscal year. It could be a quarter, a month, a six-month period, whatever. So that is available on my website, and my website is ksmartin.com. That's S as in Sue, so ksmartin.com. And then you go to the book page for the Outstanding Organization, and it's downloadable from there. And then I also have a Scribd site. I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with Scribd, but it allows you to download any kind of file type, and so it's also there, and it's I'm saying scribd.com, so it's scribd.com, and my, hang on one second, I just changed my URL, so let me just quickly, it's scribd.com/ Karen Martin Group. I'm in the process of incorporating, so my name is changing, so it's scribd.com/ Karen Martin Group. And then on Scribd, the other document that is helpful is a brand-new, hot-off-the-press organizational assessment to help organizations define a baseline from which they can measure their improvement as they're moving toward outstandingness, as I call it. You know, on their journey to becoming an outstanding organization, they can start by measuring where they're at now and then periodically throughout the year, say once a quarter or at the very least frequency, I would say, would be every 6 months, and they can use it. Now, can I mention a few things about the assessment since it's hot off the press?
Please do.
Okay. So first of all, it's not meant as a scientifically, you know, sound, academic, robust scientific research kind of assessment. It's very, very high level. It is subjective. It's meant to drive, it's meant to stimulate discussion and conversation, and it's meant to also provide some clarity and shine the light into the corners of an organization that they may have never shined the light before. So it's a, you know, it's not a, you know, a PhD level assessment. It is in the trenches. I've been getting phenomenal feedback from people who are using it that it's just they've never even thought about these questions before. And that's the point in the assessment, is thinking through. Each of the four behaviors, clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement, have 8 questions. We had 20 for each one, but decided that we should probably make it a little easier. So we just took a, you know, sample of the types of behaviors that point to either having a lot of focus, you know, outstanding focus or not so outstanding focus, et cetera. And so that's on my Scribd site as well.
Awesome. So I will be taking a look. I did see the pieces in the webinar yesterday, so it's very exciting because this is just available. And I'm excited, too, that it's available during your online book launch week, which is this week. And speaking of that, Karen, are there any upcoming events or other ways that listeners can participate with you?
Well, this week is a big focus. Of course, it'll continue all year long. But this week, if your listeners want to help spread the word around the book, there's everything that would be helpful from Amazon reviews to liking on Amazon to liking on my Facebook book page. They certainly, you know, can share links to the various webinars and all that through my website is the best place to find that. That's ksmartin.com. Any sharing that people could do would be really helpful. And then in terms of upcoming events, I'm giving a couple of workshops in April. One's in Indianapolis and one's in, San Antonio, Texas. And both of those workshops are going to actually focus on coaching, which is the way to get discipline into the organization. It's helping managers, directors, vice presidents, and frankly, even the C-suite type, CEO, CFO, et cetera, learn how to become more effective coaches and helping their organization learn how to use disciplined problem solving. So it's mainly around problem solving. So those are also available, links to those on my website under the workshops and talks menu item.
And I will add that there is a link, Karen, to your website in the show notes. So for people who are listening to this now or who download it later, a lot of my listeners are not able to participate live, but they do download. They can click on the link to your website, which goes directly to the book page, and then also click through to other areas. I also want to talk about not only the webinar you did yesterday, but on your website, you have also posted webinars on each of the 4 characteristics. Right.
Yeah, so absolutely. That's available on my book page, or you can also get to it through the webinars link on my website. So 2 different ways to get into them. And then also, they're also listed on Vimeo and also on SlideShare if people want to go to either one of those sites, if they're used to those sites as well.
Oh, isn't technology wonderful?
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're not on YouTube yet because YouTube won't let me still download hour-long video. We'll see what happens. We're trying to work that right now.
Yeah, I know the number of people will break it into like 20-minute pieces and do part 1, 2, 3
right,
because of that. So I will look forward to seeing when that happens. In our last about 6 minutes, let's open the lines for calls if there are people who want to ask you questions about anything we've talked about with the Outstanding Organization. That number's 347-215-8390. Or for those in the chat room, please type in your questions or comments for Karen. and we give people 15 seconds or so. Karen, if people want to connect with you because they, let's say they hear this podcast a month from now, what is the best way for them to connect with you?
I would say my website's a good first place to start, which is ksmartin.com. And then on my website in the upper right-hand corner and also down in the footer are all the links to various social media. The two most recent ones I've gotten on now are Pinterest and Goodreads. Are you familiar with Goodreads?
I've heard of it, but I have not out there yet.
It is fantastic. It is a great, if you like to read or you're an author, it's a great way to, you know, connect readers and authors together. And it's, you know, there's book reviews on it as well. I'm newish on it, so I'm just really getting the lay of the land, but I'm pretty impressed with that site. And Pinterest as well. I was a little late to the game there, but I'm loving Pinterest.
Well, thank you for those recommendations, because I'm just working on learning how to use Pinterest, and we'll move up my timeline to access Goodreads.
That's good. And, you know, the last thing is Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Karen Martin OPEX, which stands for Operational Excellence. So it's KarenMartinOPEX. And I'm loving Twitter. I've been on Twitter for a couple years now, and I find Twitter's my favorite social media. Can I say that? It's my favorite.
I've grown to like it just because I can do it quickly. I used to dislike the 140 character limit, but I'm getting better at it. And
you know,
you can also direct message people, which is something that I don't know that a lot of people often do. I know I've connected with authors that way, inviting them to do interviews that way, and it's surprising how many people say, yes, I'd love to. So
I love the 140 character limit. You know why?
Why?
It makes you be very, very clear and concise. It forces you, you know?
Yeah. You got to use the right words.
It's a good training ground for clarity.
It absolutely is. Well, I don't have any calls at the moment, and our guests are quiet. If they're anything like what I'm doing, I'm writing a lot as we're talking. So they may be taking notes. So I take silence as a good thing sometimes. And so as we've got just about 3.5 minutes left, Karen, we can say people could get a copy of The Outstanding Organization at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. So there are a lot of ways to find it online or in bookstores. So what is a question you wish I would have asked you but didn't? And then what is your answer?
How about, who do I think is the most outstanding organization out there?
Okay.
So I have searched high and low, and there are many, many stellar businesses, organizations, government agencies, et cetera. And they're all, you know, everyone's on a journey to outstandingness. But I looked outside of business to find an organization that I found was the most outstanding of all the organizations I studied, and it's the Blue Angels. And one of the things I learned through studying them and talking with pilots and things like that is that they really, truly have the behaviors of clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement down in a way I have not seen in business. There are definitely businesses I profile in the book like W.L. Gore, Menlo Innovations in Ann Arbor, Michigan, well, Toyota, of course. I mean, there are many organizations I mention in the book that are very, very outstanding. But to me, the Blue Angels, I had to go outside of business to find an organization that was superior on all four of those fronts. So I end the book with my stories about the Blue Angels and how they are able to implement impeccable, you know, focus and clarity and discipline. So it was fun to work with them.
And I was fortunate enough to attend a workshop they did about the importance of debriefing for projects, and it was amazing, and I've taken a lot of lessons from that into my work, and so I'm going to go back and look at that, because actually I'm almost done, but not quite done with the book, so thank you for sharing that. In our last minute and a half, what are one or two key messages you would like listeners to take away from our interview?
Well, I think one is that most people, when they first talk with me about it offline or on the side at a conference or something, they seem to feel a little intimidated if they're anything below, say, a vice president level, and feel like they don't really have the means to implement the kinds of things I'm suggesting in the book because of where they sit in the organization. And I quickly help them understand that they actually can implement all of these wherever their sphere of influence is. So it doesn't matter where someone sits in an organization. If they've got a staff or even a small work team, they can instill greater clarity, focus, discipline, and get higher degrees of engagement just in their work teams. So it'd be great if every CEO in the globe, across the globe, heard this and said, all right, tally-ho, we're going to start looking at our behaviors and start making these steps toward becoming more and more outstanding because we're shifting our behaviors, but that's just not realistic. And so I'm a realist. I'm a pragmatist. I live in the trenches. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm a scrappy gal. And I say, you know what? Roll up your sleeves. Get going where you're at. You can do a lot. And when you get critical mass across a whole organization, things just happen, no matter how supportive or not the CEO is. Things happen when people are getting results, and that's what happens when you just start wherever you're at in your organization.
Karen, that is a very powerful way to end. So people can act on these principles, these characteristics, wherever they are. I want to thank you so much for taking time to share the exciting concepts in the Outstanding Organization with my listeners. It's been a pleasure spending the last hour with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciated the invitation. It was very fun getting a chance to talk with you about it. Thank you.
It was a pleasure, and I would look forward to connecting with you about your next book, which we didn't have a chance to talk about. Again, I encourage my listeners to click on the website link in the show notes and visit Karen's website. And most importantly, get your hands on the Outstanding Organization, so that you can eliminate chaos and build the foundation for everyday excellence by using clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement. Thanks again so much, Karen, for being here. And until next time, please take action on something you heard that could be a spark to ignite a positive change in your life. And stay safe.
Thank you, Melanie.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.